members of the board in order to begin. So it does weigh heavily on me that it is 8:31 and this gavel is cold and untouched.
All right, I'm Brian from up in Mesquite.
Yeah, but we can't count you because you're not sworn in.
Right, you didn't swear at me yet, so.
Can we swear in on the phone?
We're going to have to.
So, Brian, nice to meet you. Bob Beers. You're going to have to swear that you're actually holding up your right hand when we get to that point.
I will do that, and I will hold my right hand up.
So he has been appointed but not sworn in. Do we have a quorum? We don't have a quorum. He doesn't count until he's sworn in. Anybody else on the phone?
Rod is on the phone.
Rod Woodbury is on the phone.
Richard's here.
And Richard's here. That sounds like a quorum. We have five. Good morning. I will call to order this meeting of the Southern Nevada Health District Board of Health, a special meeting on a Monday. Are we properly noticed? And are we have a quorum? So are we full of ourselves? Yes, we are. We have a quorum. So please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
America.
To the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. We're going to start our day with the swearing in of Brian Worston, who is our new member representing the city of Mesquite. Brian is on the telephone. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
Who is going to do the swearing? Jackie?
I, please state your name. Please repeat after me.
Brian Worston.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear
that I will support, protect, and defend.
That I will support, defend, and protect and defend
the Constitution and government.
The Constitution and government
of the United States.
Of the United States
and the Constitution and government.
And the Constitution and government
of the state of Nevada.
Of the state of Nevada
against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Well, now she's being sworn in.
Whether domestic or foreign.
For whether domestic or foreign.
And that I will bear true faith.
And that I will bear true faith.
Allegiance and loyalty to the same.
And allegiance and loyalty to the same.
Any ordinance, resolution, or any law.
Any ordinance, resolution, or any law.
Of any state notwithstanding.
Of any state notwithstanding.
And that I will well and faithfully perform.
And that I will and faithfully perform.
All the duties of a member.
All the duties as a member.
Of the Southern Nevada District Board of Health.
Of the Southern Nevada District Board of Health.
On which I am about to enter.
Of which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And welcome aboard. At this time, we'll take agenda item number 4, public comment, devoted to items appearing on the agenda. I think we have public comment for some items off the agenda, too, it sounds like, from the weekend email. That'll come at the end of the proceedings, but don't worry, it won't take long. At this time, we'll take...
Councilman Beers?
Up, and I hear my colleague from the city of Las Vegas on the telephone.
Yes, I just want to tell you, I've been here since the swearing-in began. I just wanted you to know that.
Okay. We have you marked in. Thank you very much. Dr. Iser?
Since there isn't a CHO report today, I did want to report to you in public comment about the wonderful event we had for the holidays and awards recognitions last Saturday. The Employee Events Committee ably did a great job. We held it at Texas Casino And it was a lot of fun. There was dancing, there were awards, there was laughing, there was clapping. And I understand that there was a flash mob that, in case any of you would like to see it, we'll probably have online at some point. So we wanted to thank, I think at least two board members came, Mr. Devine and Mayor Woodbury. And I hope that they had a good time. I went around table by table and asked how the food was and if people were having a good time. And universally, everyone said yes. So I wanted to report that to you. Thank you.
And my regrets for missing it. I had an opportunity to grandparent, but it had to take me out of town. So that's what I did. Good morning, Victoria.
Victoria Harding, SNHD, SEIU, and taxpayer of this fair county. And I just want to say real quick, too, the Employee Events Committee party was awesome. If you didn't go, you missed it. So I'm speaking today in opposition to the job descriptions for the Executive Administrative Analyst and Academic Affairs Coordinator as they are currently written, as well as some of the fiscal issues. With respect to the Academic Affairs Coordinator, we currently have employees across the district doing coordination of students, interns, and medical residents, but there's a wish to consolidate this into a dedicated position and develop a defined program. We have similar positions descriptions to this with similar duties. Our Community Outreach Coordinator, who coordinates our volunteers, is two salary schedule steps higher than this position. He is union eligible and does not report to the Chief Health Officer but to the Public Information Manager. I find no reason why this position would be need to directly report to Dr. Iser and should probably report to the manager of whatever area this program falls under on the organizational chart, which I'm not sure of where that is. This position still... This position still reads like it has two different levels, which indicates this program SNHD would like to foster should probably have two separate positions, a higher level technically specific position that demands a higher educational understanding to deal with the educational level of these students, interns, and medical residents, as well as a lower level administrative position that would not have as demanding of educational requirements. My suggestion would be to move in that direction and write them accordingly. Additionally, the Academic Affairs Coordinator position has no real duties or responsibilities that require this position to be bargaining unit eligible, other than what Dr. Iser stated at the last board meeting, that he doesn't want any bargaining unit eligible employee in his office when he isn't there. There is no reason for the FERPA files to be stored in his office. I found Dr. Iser's statement to be offensive and discriminatory against anyone in a position that is eligible to be in the union. I have shared my feelings with this on HR and when we sat down to speak about these positions again, but I don't expect anything will be done about the blatant discrimination that we experience. In the time that I have been chief steward, I cannot recall any job classification that was created by this administration that was put forward as union eligible. It's not acceptable to add statements such as, they will serve as a scribe and management assistant during negotiations and access to confidential files, including but not limited to SNHD personnel files and student files, just to remove job classifications from the union that would otherwise be eligible. NRS 288.170 describes what a confidential employee is, and this position duties would have no impact on our collective bargaining as this position suggests. I have already stated my intention to take this to the MRB to resolve the union eligibility aspect. With respect to the executive administrative analyst, I'm opposed to this position because it is fiscally irresponsible and a gross waste of public funds. I've spoke with HR twice on this position, and I'm still unsure of what this employee will be doing other than being involved in our future collective bargaining. If no one can adequately describe what this employee will be doing and the business need it fills, then I cannot support the creation and hiring of this position. I don't find the district and union negotiated enough to hire anyone as a dedicated scribe or assistant. Management has always had plenty of help from our current staff that is confidential for every other bargaining over the last 10 years I've been here. The other duties don't make sense organizationally to justify this position either. I feel the urgent need for this position is only related to our wage reopener and the bargaining Dr. Iser suggests should be done in relation to our class comp study. This is not a position created for the administration division, but for Dr. Iser personally. With every new position, I always ask myself, would the district need this position no matter who's in charge of the administration or filling the position? No other district health officer in the past has needed this position, and I can't see the need once Dr. Iser is gone. I feel this position is being created under this anti-union discriminatory environment and has no purpose other than to hurt our current employees. The board saw for one moment last meeting when Dr. Iser made a statement against anyone who's union eligible, and that is what I and the employees endure every day. In the last 2 months, relations have grown increasingly hostile towards me and other employees in retaliation for grievances we have filed. I intend to move forward with such and any and all remedies for this discrimination until it stops and we can again function as an organization that cares about its employees, even the union-eligible ones. We cannot fund a position like this when our organization can't afford any overtime for the employees to perform their necessary duties. This has caused programs to cut the quality and quantity of our services and has a potential negative impact on the community. This forced adjusting of schedules is a violation of our contract, but still continues. Environmental health fees have overtime included in the cost, yet the employees are forced to adjust. The public health lab employees have been asked to adjust instead of receive overtime, yet they're responsible for the accurate diagnoses of our outbreaks. My area in HIV-STD has recently been asked to adjust instead of receive overtime for our night and weekend outreaches, taking time away from the employees working their cases during business hours, despite the fact that the outreaches are grant deliverables that is paid by the grant and saves the district no money. In fact, for the last 3 years, my area has given back $700,000 in grant money every year that we haven't been able to use. And we don't get enough taxpayer allocation to leverage our grants in the way that we need them. Page 83 of the CAFR shows our morbidity stats over the last 10 years, and you can see that we have some rises in the STDs that we should be working on, but we don't have the employee staffing necessary to investigate these potential outcomes of chlamydia and gonorrhea, especially while we still have a syphilis outbreak. 5-4 of 2015, we stopped testing for gonorrhea and chlamydia at our outreach sites due to funding, and you can see the levels rise. Employees cannot work 4 10-hour days because there's not a cap on how much holiday bank time an employee could earn who works 4 10s. I feel we have a greater pressing fiscal responsibilities right now than this executive administrative analyst position. We cannot scrimp when it comes to the employees and the community and then create an abundance of administrative positions. Dr. Iser once stated in an all-hands meeting that taxpayer allocation dollars is not to provide services to the community, but is for the administration of a health district. That philosophy is why this administration has been thriving and the employees and community have not. I ask you to not contribute to the anti-union and elitist atmosphere and to not approve these positions as written. Thank you.
Victoria, since that appears to have been a prepared statement, would you be kind enough to give that to the record keepers so that they can transcribe it? It would be even cooler if you could email it. Good morning.
My name is Regina Ellis, SEIU-SNHD, and I want to talk to you about our opposition regarding these positions. I want to share a little bit with the board that I've heard some comments from you that you're not involved in union business, and we understand that. The reason I want to bring this to your attention is this, is that we have a collective bargaining agreement with this employer known as the district. And so there are rights that we have that this current administration feels that they can just bring, for instance, these positions to you and have them approved without coming through the negotiated language that's in the contract. And I'm just going to share a tiny bit with you. One is the district and the union recognize that in order to reach goals, Southern Nevada Health District will foster a workplace that is safe, fair, honest, efficient, and free from harassment at all times, and at which time staff and all clients are treated with dignity and respect. And you heard Victoria speak to the environment here, and especially in environmental health right now is feeling that they are not free from harassment at this current time. Regarding these positions, the district shall notify the union in writing of its intent to establish any new classification prior to implementation and state the determination of the new classification is or is not a bargaining unit classification. So these positions were not brought to the union initially, they were brought to the board. And this is the culture of this current administration, is that we have no right to say anything about what goes on in our workplace. And We have a collective bargaining agreement, a contract that is negotiated between both parties, and it's a legal binding document. So the reason I bring this to you is because I understand that your job is different. However, I want you to know the reason why we're doing this and that there are things that should be brought to our attention and we should be notified before they're brought here. And that is not happening. In relation to the academic affairs coordinator, if you look up this position, you will mostly see that they have these kinds of positions in university settings. In hospitals, it's a little bit different. You might have like a credentialing office where everybody that's going to come into the building has all of their background checked and everything. So initially when we received this, if you look at this position, it does not meet the requirement of a confidential employee. They are not providing legal advice. They're not developing policies and procedures relating to labor or employee relations. And they're not working on anything to do with budget formulation. So this position is not considered to add this definition as confidential. When you look at the job duties, you have a lot of coordinating, accessing, cataloging, researching, investigating, analyzing. These are not job duties of someone who could not be in a bargaining unit. The first initial job description we received was very different from this one. When we brought this issue to your attention, we received a second job description that was changed. There were new job duties that were included in the second job description. Access to confidential files, including but not limited to SNHD personnel files and student files. Why the academic affairs coordinator would have to access our personnel files, we don't really know. Research and investigate programmatic placement and operational matters and develop alternative courses of action. Coordinate with us SNHD contracts in the legal division to establish affiliation. May serve as a scribe and management assistant during negotiations. Why an academic affairs coordinator would do something like that is really kind of odd. So we oppose this position being a bargaining unit ineligible and actually oppose the fact that it's FLSA exempt. The executive administrative analyst, in our current bargaining unit, we have a title called administrative analyst. And so this position is already in our classifications of covered job titles in the bargaining unit. This one is changed to be an executive administrative analyst. So with that, just want to say that we oppose both of these positions as bargaining unit ineligible. Thank you.
Any additional public comment at this time?
Okay. Good morning. My name is Carolyn Ivy Mitchell. I work in environmental health. I'm an SEIU steward. This is related to budget and how money is spent in environmental health.
Can you keep this to items appearing on our agenda, please? We can take testimony on items not appearing on our agenda at the end of the meeting.
Well, this is related to budget and how money is spent.
Which agenda item?
8.
Yeah, we don't have any budget action today on the agenda. It's just approval of our CAFR results.
Okay. Well, I'll come back on the second one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more public comment on agendized items today? Okay, seeing none, we will move on to agenda item 5, adoption of the December 12, 2016 agenda. Members, any comments?
Okay, I'm good.
I move to approve.
The agenda has been moved to be approved as printed. Is there a second?
Second.
All members opposed say nay. That item passes unanimously. Agenda item 4 is our consent agenda. Any questions? You've all had the material.
Actually, I do have a couple questions.
Okay, Mr. Dobine.
On the academic affairs coordinator, I also had the question, why is that position have access to personnel files? I understand the student files, but I didn't quite get why personnel files.
We have a lot of our own folks who are going to that we pay for to go to various programs, including the one that I've mentioned to you earlier, which is the certificate in public health. But other people are going for bachelor degrees and master's degree, and this will be coordinated under this same position. Okay. These are our own employees who need to have access to the confidential personnel reports.
I originally thought this position was just to coordinate the interns.
No, it's always been for both of those categories, both employees and non-employees.
Okay. And my second question on the executive administrative analyst, don't we have somebody that does all this analyzing already in accounting or finance?
No, we don't. We do have an administrative analyst for the three programmatic areas, which would be community health, clinical services, and environmental health. We don't have one for administrative health, and so this position would do that and would do what they do and even more.
Okay, and again, I'm going to ask the same question, why access to personnel records?
Well, this person will, both of these will be, but this person will be involved in union negotiations, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
And if I could ask board members on the telephone to stay muted unless you're making a comment. We're getting some background noise coming through.
I'm sorry, I think it's my thing, Bob. I'm out of school and I can't get to any place quiet.
That's trying. Try the library.
Try the library. They're giving out gifts there. I'm walking to the end of the platform.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say, at least for myself, I was not comfortable with these positions the first time that we brought them up. And in my mind, although we sent everybody back to work together to understand what the thing is, it doesn't appear that that has been resolved. And, you know, the last six positions that we've hired have all been classified as not as confidential employees, and I'm trying to figure out why we keep going in that direction, because we've been doing this health district for a very long time, and I know at the county we do not on a regular basis go out and try and seek positions that become confidential.
If I may, we have approved 11 environmental health inspectors for this fiscal year, all of whom are union eligible. We've approved six disease investigators, all of whom are union eligible. We've approved an epidemiologist who is union eligible. We have also approved an additional employee, I can't remember the title, for EMS and trauma systems, who is union eligible. I believe that we have hired several people within administration, all of whom are union eligible. So we have hired and have in the including nurses and others, all of whom are union eligible. And these are all either already hired or in the queue to be hired. So it's not just union ineligible folks. I'm not sure which six you're talking about. The only one I can think of that has been union ineligible besides this one is the pharmacist. There may have been others, but I don't think so.
Well, I guess, and I apologize, but I've been under the weather a few weeks now. I'm hoping this is my last week. But my point is how many people are going to be within the collective bargaining process? Because I always understood that it's a very small circle that works with very different groups so that they could get reasonable discussion had. So I was opposed to this a couple months ago, and I'm still opposed to it, so I don't want to belabor it as much as I just don't understand why we keep having all of these potentially confidential employees.
There aren't that many confidential employees. The pharmacist would be union ineligible, I'm not sure if that's the same as confidential, but these are the only two that I can recall asking for in recent months, except for about a year ago when we had an applicant for the employee health nurse who also deals and works in HR, but that was about a year ago, that position. So no, these are the only two. And I must say that we have complied with the union requirements. We have given them the number of days that they need. Because they disagree with us does not mean that we haven't gone through the process. We absolutely have, and they've had the time to comment. But whether we agree with the union or not, we still bring forward those positions to you that we feel we need to. These are two that aren't, it's almost like the one with the employee health nurse, is that if you hadn't approved at that time, it would have been, I think it was a year ago, I think in November, so we would have had to go to have gone 2 months without someone who could do the to do the work of the employee health nurse. And here we've gone a month where I have work that needs to be done that because of your request that we have gone back and rediscussed these with the union. So I would really ask you to move this and approve it if you would, please.
Would it be too self-serving to ask someone from epidemiology to come tell us what Commissioner Kirkpatrick has? More importantly, whether she's contagious.
I think that she probably, I don't want to guess, but it sounds like a bronchitis to me.
Yes, and I'm allergic to penicillin, so I have to work a little harder.
So I think she's sitting two seats away. That's right at the verge of where she coughs your way that you might be exposed.
Thank you.
I would move maybe another 6 inches.
I'll take viral bullets for the rest of the team here.
Plenty of them over here, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the tenure on this this board that Commissioner Kirkpatrick has, or the background knowledge of many of you, but a lot of these board meetings, there's such a distinct difference of opinion, and I'm watching the body language of everybody over here when other people are talking, and you say, Dr. Iser, that you've had these conversations. I just don't understand how three union representatives would say no, which would mean that they're all three are lying. And I'm not saying that they are, and I'm not saying that you are, but don't you take minutes of any meetings or track anything that is discussed? Does anybody have any background knowledge?
Sure. Chandra Hudson, who is our HR director, is the one who had these discussions with the union both last month and this month. And we have followed the outline in the contract of however many days and more that is required to get the positions to them and to have the, if they so choose, they can have discussions. And she had those discussions with them both times.
Okay.
And there's a, I guess briefly, I'm not sure who would briefly go into this, but the state does have a arbiter of these things.
Sure.
You want to tell us, Annette?
The union always has the option. Am I on?
Yes.
The union always has the option of submitting these to the EMRB for decision.
And that hasn't been done?
Has
that been done?
No.
Any reason why? If that's your right to do that?
No, we're not going to take additional testimony. No. No, thank you. No, thank you. So are we going to – so we can move to not approve these. I'm fine with that. But
– Well, this point, I can't –
At this point, all you know is that they have not.
Okay.
Right?
Actually, I make a motion to approve the consent agenda, but as follows. Approve the minutes of the Board of Health meeting. Approve petition 39-16 and deny 43-16.
Is there a second to that motion? That motion fails for the lack of a second.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask, so what have we been doing since the budget was passed in lieu of these positions? I mean, so why do we ought to have them today? I mean, I understand, at least I thought that I was going to be okay with the academic affairs person, because I thought we were trying to bring in our younger generation, and we do have a shortfall with you know, everybody in the medical field. But I didn't know that they were going to be access to files. I didn't know that they weren't going to be focused specifically on, you know, coordination of everybody moving. So, I mean, I would probably be okay with the academic affairs coordinator if they were just that, just a coordinator who made sure that they showed up at one place and everybody was getting the documentation, but I didn't know that they needed, I mean, in my mind, and I could be completely wrong, I mean, when you get a certification, you get all those things, you give that to the HR person, you don't need to add steps all the time. So I might be okay with the academic affairs person if they only did the coordination components.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm a little bit confused because the coordination involves more than just, I think, the simple word of coordination. So it's coming up with agreements with academic institutions. For example, I have a new student who is a medical student at Touro University here, but an MPH student at Touro University in California. So we have to come up with an academic agreement with them. We still have on the books to really be done an academic agreement with UNLV School of Medicine and with Roseman School of Medicine. We have an agreement that we need to come up with Roseman as well. Because of our new pharmacists, we can bring in new pharmacy students, and we don't have that piece. I don't believe that that's in place yet. So it's more than just coordinating people going here and there. It's coming up with these agreements. And then at the end, helping us to come up with a standard method, depending on which school they're from, which category they're from, an evaluation, and helping to make sure that we get our evaluations in on time. So it's more than just a little bit of coordination for getting students in and out. And if we look at the two programs for at-risk youth, that's going to be equally involved and intricate in terms of we now have a couple of new entities who are interested in bringing in their students, and I can't think for the life of me right now what the one is that we discussed these last couple of weeks, but getting those people in, making sure along with the program that's sponsoring, and we have the two programs, one in environmental health and one in EMS and trauma systems, to make sure that they're qualified to come in and can do the job and then get through the program and hopefully in the long run be also involved in trying to place people after they finish these programs. We don't have anyone that can do that at this point, so it's a little bit more than just coordination. It's really enhancing our ability to become what I've described to you in the past, an academic health, in most places it's called a department, but it would be an academic health district here, to where we really have a robust academic health district that brings in all the students that we can, gives them excellent training positions, and excellent training opportunities, and then help them ease back into wherever they're going to. We will have an EIS officer again. We don't this year, but last year we did. We might have CSTE epidemiologist who will be coming in as well for training. And so all of these require, it's so many moving kinds of things, it's difficult for anyone to take into consideration. And the reason that it reports to me is because we have students coming in from community health, for clinical services, for environmental health, and so we can't just place this position in one of those divisions. It has to be at my level to be able to make sure that we can get all of these students in and through with an excellent training opportunity.
So then, Mr. Chairman, let me ask one more question, and then my voice is gone, so I got to save it. Are we going to have the ability to see in April when our preliminary budget comes back, what accountability measures that this person was actually able to put into place? Because what I don't want to hire is just more paper pushers, right? I want to be able to say, here's the resources that we have, here's what this person has been able to do. Will we be able to see that?
Absolutely, with the following exception. I currently have the grant writer who is union eligible who reports to me. And I am getting ready to do her 3-month evaluation, and I'll end up doing a 6-month evaluation. I'd be glad to give you summaries of those for these, but I can't actually give you their evaluation because those are protected under whatever personnel rules that we have. But I'd be absolutely delighted to give you outcomes that were able to be accomplished, policies written and enacted, agreements that have been renegotiated and renegotiated, and numbers of students who come in. Absolutely, those are outcome measures that we will be measuring and that I will be measuring as a method of determining success in this in these positions.
So I'm going to use the prerogative of the chair and dissolve the consent agenda. We'll take these items one at a time. On agenda item 6(1), this is a motion to approve the minutes of our last meeting if a member feels compelled to make such a motion.
Move to approve the minutes from the last meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is seconded. All members opposed say nay. Motion passes. On agenda item 6(2), petition number 39-16, approval of a new classification specification for academic affairs coordinator schedule 19. Direct staff accordingly or take other action as deemed necessary. Is there a motion?
Move to approve petition 39-16.
Is there a second?
Second.
That motion is barely seconded. All members opposed say nay. Trying to make it easy on you.
Mr. Chair.
Motion passes unanimously.
Before you go to number 3, I would like to remind the board that union negotiations are upcoming. We've perhaps starting this month, next month, and this third position is part and parcel to our success in coming to a lively discussion and getting the union contracts renegotiated and approved by the union.
Okay. Item 6(3), is there a motion? Oh, come on.
Move to approve.
There's a motion to approve. Is there a second to that motion? Motion dies for a second. You want to try to take a shot, Doug?
I move to decline or deny petition 43-16.
Is there a second? There's a second from Commissioner Kirkpatrick. All members opposed say nay. Nay. One opposed.
Sorry, I didn't understand the motion.
The motion is to deny petition 43-16. And it is seconded. And so far, I'm the only person opposed to the motion.
I'll add my nay, too.
Does that pass, Annette? I think
it
does.
I'm not sure what the intent is. If you
the don't motion is to deny, and apparently, well, how many members do we have? 3 on the phone?
Would that preclude? Is the intent of the motion to preclude?
So we have 7 members.
Back, or are there other?
The motion passes 5-2. Okay. That takes us to agenda item 7, where we have no items to be heard. That takes us to agenda item 8 for report, discussion, and action. 8(1) is to review and discuss our CAFR.
Good morning. Sharon McCoy Huber, Financial Services Manager. What I'd like to do is introduce Tamara Miramontes with Ide Bailey, our CPA firm that covered our current audit that she's going to report on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Again, Tamara Miramontes. I was the engagement partner with Ide Bailey for the audit of the June 30th, 2016 financial statements for the Southern Nevada Health District. And I'm just here to report what our audit opinions were. We issued an opinion on the basic financial statements and the schedule of expenditures of federal awards. We issued an unmodified opinion, which is a clean opinion. We believe the financial statements are materially correct as they have been presented. We also issue a report related to internal controls and noncompliance with any laws, regulations under government auditing standards. We did not identify any material noncompliance to be reported. We also did not identify any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in internal control that would be identified in that report. And then we also issued a report related to your federal programs money. We had identified three and tested three major programs this year. And we issue a report on noncompliance and also internal controls for those major programs. We have an unmodified opinion on the noncompliance for all those, so again, clean opinion. And then also we did not identify any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses with the internal controls related to those programs. So it was a good audit.
I love a boring audit report. Board members, any comments? Don't appear to be any. Thank you very much, Ms. Miramontes.
Thank you.
And at this point, we will take a motion to accept the CAFR for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2016. Motion made by Commissioner Kirkpatrick.
Second.
Second by Doug Dobine. All members opposed say nay. That motion passes. Agenda item 8 sub 2, to receive a report from the November 28th, 2016 Finance Committee meeting, of which I was the chair.
Of which you were the chair, and I believe that, not speaking for you, sir, but what you all did was to listen to the audit that they presented to you in much fuller detail than here, and that you wanted to come to recommend approval or acceptance of the audit at this full board meeting.
Good thing, since we already did that. Okay. Any questions, board? I don't think we need to take any action there, since we have already approved the CAFR. At this point, we will note the agenda item 9 has an informational item, which is the letter appointing Brian Worston to the board here, replacing Cynthia Delaney. Welcome aboard, Brian, if you're still with us. And that brings us to agenda item 10, public comment, a period devoted to comments by the general public and discussion of those comments about many matters relevant to the board's jurisdiction. Please step up to the speaker's podium, clearly state your name, and spell your last name for the record. Pretty fast. Sorry for the delay.
Carolyn Ivy Mitchell, I-V-E-Y. Dash M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L, S-N-H-D-S-E-I-U, Environmental Health. Good morning. The last time I spoke at public comment, I asked all of you to please ensure there would be no retaliation before I read a letter to you from one of my coworkers. Well, I feel I was retaliated against last week, along with two other food operations inspectors. In response to grievances we filed earlier this year, as you are the top of the chain of command for SNHD, I humbly request that you reverse this punishment. Last week on Thursday, December 9th, at least 10 experienced inspectors in environmental health were reassigned to other sections. I was sent an email at 7:30 while I was driving to work. The email came from Jackie Rezatar and directed me to be at a meeting that same morning at 8:15 a.m. By the way, two inspectors from other areas had telephoned me Wednesday night while I was working late, saying that they may need a union representative because they were told by their supervisors to report to this meeting, and the supervisors would not tell them what the meeting was about. I would find out the next morning that I, too, was invited to this meeting. I knew that I was in trouble when I phoned my supervisor and my senior, and they let the phone go to voicemail. They routinely don't do this. They didn't answer my call to ask them what this meeting was about. My supervisor finally called me back around 7:50, to tell me that he had been directed by Ms. Rezatar to not give me any details about this meeting. I sent an email to Ms. Rezatar at about 7:57 asking her what this meeting was about and basically wrote out my Weingarten rights and stated I wanted the chief steward present at the meeting. Ms. Rezatar replied that the meeting had nothing to do with termination, nor would it impact my personal working conditions, and that I did not need a union representative at the meeting. I would not be asked any questions at the meeting. She did not say what the meeting would be about. All of our supervisors who were present at the meeting lasted less than 10 minutes after Ms. Rezatar started to speak. She told us we were all being reassigned as a result of interest cards, vacancies, and business needs of the district. We were all given envelopes from HR, which contained reassignment requests, and told to report to our new offices on Monday, today. So I went from being a strip food operations inspector on Thursday of last week, and now I'm assigned to the Vector program and public accommodations. Some of the workers were devastated. Some cried. Most were angry. The two workers who actually put in request cards felt guilt because so many of their coworkers had been negatively affected by their requests to move. Supervisors apologized. Managers apologized and said they did not support this and had no choice in the matter. I requested and was granted leave for the rest of that day and the following Friday so I could wrap my head around this, process it, and figure out how to help the workers as their union steward. Today, I would like for you to have Ms. Rezatar explain to you and all of these employees why this was done. I have over 10 years of experience as a strip inspector in food ops. All of the other inspectors are trained and experienced at what they do. How does it make good business sense to transfer any of us? We will have to be retrained. This will cost money, taxpayer money. The operators that hold permits, it will cost them money. And it will also cost them the relationships and rapport that we have built with them. I am named on two or more grievances, which will go to arbitration next month. Two other food ops inspectors joined me this year in these grievances. We refused to mutually agree with management on forced adjusted work schedules to perform night inspections. The contract clearly states that employees must mutually agree to this. All other food ops inspectors except the three of us agreed to adjust mostly out of intimidation and fear of losing their jobs. The three of us are sure we were moved so management can tell the arbitrator the employees who filed the grievances are no longer a problem. I challenge you today to have Ms. Rezatar come up here right now and explain why those moves were made. If it's not retaliatory punishment hidden under the guise of interest cards, tell us why it is not. Environmental health, the district, industry, and the community that we serve are all watching this. This is a perfect opportunity to get us all on the same page. We, the employees and the union reps, come to this meeting every month to tell you our concerns and ask for your help and support. We often see no action as a result of these requests for help, but I'm asking you to please help us today. I want you to know that I'm a 20-year Air Force retired veteran, a Master Sergeant Select when I left the Air Force. I was an environmental health apprentice, journeyman, supervisor, manager, and finally, superintendent of the Aerospace Medicine Squadron. I've done this job for over 30 years. I know what it's like to fight for the rights of people who you don't know. I don't know any of you. When I was in the service, I fought for every one of you and your families. I want you to fight for us. You don't know me. You don't know the employees. Please fight for us and our rights. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service then and now. Good morning.
Good morning, esteemed members of the Board of Health. Larry Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S. I'm a supervisor in environmental health, food operations, downtown office. Thank you for your undivided attention and allowing me to offer another perspective on a situation that has recently been brought to your attention. As you were just informed, last week EH Director Jackie Rezatar made a decision to effect reassignment of 11 employees in environmental health in the EHS 2 position. Among those moved were three quality employees who currently have a dispute with management about adjusting their schedules. I'm here today to lend my support to Ms. Rezatar's decision, and here's a short version of why I offer my support. In the current contract, in an effort to curb overtime cost, the General Bargaining Unit and SNHG management agreed that employees could, for one adjusted work week, be mandated to adjust their work schedules to meet temporary critical business needs of the district. The order of assignment is by reverse seniority. In food operations, we first attempted to use this contract only for special events and by reverse seniority. The net effect was that the employees were given a rigid schedule of when they had to adjust. There was no flexibility due to the agreement of reverse seniority. Personally, I had an employee in my office who had traditionally taken his anniversary off, and he had done this for, he had established a pattern and done this for many years. Unfortunately, due to the mandatory adjustment per the contract and his position on the seniority list, his adjustment came on his anniversary, but I had no option other than to mandate that he work on the day that he had taken off for years. After that quarter, supervisors approached their employees and asked if they would prefer to voluntarily adjust their schedules for regularly assigned work in exchange for them receiving overtime for special events. This would allow them the flexibility of managing their own schedule while also giving them the same, if not more, opportunities for overtime. In my office, when I approached them with this, 100% of my staff opted to voluntarily adjust for assigned work and take overtime for special events. I absolutely support the rights of the three people, the three employees, to grieve this decision, but I understand that if we force people to adjust per the current contract, we must go by reverse seniority. However, please understand that these three employees do not represent food operations as a whole. At least some of the employees assigned to food operations enjoy the flexibility of dictating their own schedules and do not prefer to have me as management telling them what week of the quarter they have to work and what hours they have to work. When I first approached my staff with this proposal, when we as food operations extended beyond my office, approached staff with this proposal, the overwhelming majority wanted to adopt the current practice. So that brings us to today. We have three employees out of approximately 40 who want to return to the strict interpretation of the contract, as is their right to grieve. We also have other employees who are sympathetic to their situation, including myself. However, there are many options that the contract allows, the contracting personnel code allow. One, we have supervisors mandating each quarter when employees would have to adjust, and that's problematic for the reasons I just described. Two, we could have everyone voluntarily adjust so that mandated adjustments aren't necessary. Three, the contract does allow reassignments of those who won't adjust for those who will. And four, assigning every person in food operations to shift work for at least 30 days. In the contract, there is no guaranteed set amount for overtime for employees. So the grievances center around violations of the contract. Environmental health has a long-standing history of reassignments for as long as I've been here, and has been standard practice during my employment. And I have personally been subjected to involuntary reassignment for the needs of the district. Employees that are willing to adjust their schedules have always had priority for after-hours work over those who prefer overtime. The reassignments are absolutely in line with what has been standard practice since I've been here. In the case of the three employees with the pending grievances that have been reassigned, I don't feel that a reasonable person would find this to be punitive or disciplinary measure. All three are being assigned to their current job position, but in offices where if they are required to work after hours, they would always be paid overtime. All three have expressed that they don't want to voluntarily adjust, and they've been given assignments where that won't happen to them. The last option is either the creation of a shift office, a shift work office, or assigning all of food operations as a whole to do shift work. Both are disruptive for SNHD as a whole, but that does appear to be allowed by the current contracted personnel code. By choosing the more benign option of reassignment, Ms. Rezatar has met the needs of the three employees that do not want to voluntarily adjust while also preserving the work environment of food operations as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning again.
Yeah. Victoria Harding, SNHD, SEIU. I was just appalled at what I just heard, that anybody could think that they could go and make policies outside of our contract. Even union representatives doing that is appalling. These negotiations, which I was in, Larry wasn't in, I was in, and we made that mandatory, the allowing of a mandatory adjusted schedule as a way of cutting down overtime on our large events for environmental health. Now, because environmental health is not the only part of the health district, we had to write it in a way that was able to be used across the district. For that, it was a temporary critical business need. That critical temporary business need is something that if we don't do our job, that if we don't go out and do Electric Daisy or NASCAR or any of these things, potential foodborne illnesses can be out there and the district would, or the public would be at jeopardy. We put forth this as well when we were doing the fees for these large events, that there was not going to be overtime for these large events. You can't just take something that we bargained to do one thing and turn it into something to do something else because management didn't find it worked into their way of doing things. I do not know of employees who said that they would rather do that. I know of employees who do not want to be forced to adjust. Mutually agreeing to adjust has always been our contract. It's a win-win for everybody. Those people who want to adjust their schedules have the ability to do that. It's a bonus for everybody to be able to do that. And I'm just sitting here flabbergasted at what I just heard. Sorry.
Thank you.
Hi, Regina Ellis, SNHD, SEIU. So in the what has been happening is that we have had this ongoing issue in EH with mandatory adjusting of schedules and violating the current collective bargaining agreement. So we have not chosen to settle this issue because it's strictly a contractual issue. So when we chose not to come forward and try to settle this issue before arbitration, this is the result of that. The employees that stepped forward that said that they did not want to be part of the mandatory adjustment and seeing that the contract was violated, they were included in a group of people who were not the people that stepped forward that said they didn't want to be mandated, and all of them got caught up in this way of trying to say that, well, now none of these employees will have to adjust anymore. We'll just move them to different areas. There's ways to fill vacancies. If there was a business need here at this employer, there were no vacancies posted. This was an idea that was to solve another problem. And so if you would just think about yourself working in an area for 10 years and someone comes and says, you're not going to work here anymore, we're going to flip you somewhere else. And it's really, from an employee perspective, it's disrespectful. No one was talked to about this issue to say that we have to do this or we're having an issue in this area. Who's interested in volunteering? That wasn't done. The majority of the employees that were involved in this group did not express any desire whatsoever to move, but they were the majority of the people that were moved. The people who were also included were the people who were involved in the grievance that's going toward arbitration. So this area, we continually have this type of behavior and this kind of culture. It seems to really, really be a problem in this particular area. And Also, I want to bring back something that was said here at a board meeting, and this is in relationship to the positions that we were talking about and kind of fits in with the culture here. And that's probably what you're picking up on, is that the administration has said that we do not have to talk to the union about any of our decisions. Whatever we feel that we want to do, we'll bring here to the board, even when it's in violation of our contract. And that's kind of the culture where we're at right now, that the employees really aren't included in decisions that could be that are included in the collective bargaining agreement, because they're things that have to do with employment. We understand that there, you know, we have a community out there and we all are here to work for the public. So that's probably where you're picking up a lot of the discrepancy here, and this is why we're bringing it to your attention. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Al Sang. I'm an EHS. Been with the district for over 11 years. I just wanted to say that irregardless of contract or not wanting to or wanting to or being willing to adjust schedules, over the past few months, we've seen morale kind of like pick up. And all of a sudden, we run into this, and me being the most senior environmental health specialist, most senior in the sense that I'm the oldest, not the highest rank. A lot of my colleagues come up to me, and without any exception, I can attest, although I would not say their names, that they are very, very unhappy, but they're not willing to express it for fear of being transferred or for fear of being moved to a place where they don't have their hearts. I think that we as EHSs, as health inspectors, say simply, we build a lot of relations with our operators, and that was instilled in us by our director, whom we respect very much. That relationship that we've been building with all our operators, it's going to come crashing down. Because 9 out of the 11, from what I understand, because I don't even know how many were transferred, but from what I understand, at least 9 did not request that transfer. Those are 9 health inspectors who have developed a working relationship, who have educated their operators, and who have consistently delivered to the health department. I, for one, I spend a lot of time with my operators, and so do all of my colleagues. Bottom line is that regardless of contract or what I want, what somebody else might want, and it's not getting, I think that respectfully, we will request from our director and our chief health officer to please reconsider. Because if what we're looking for is a good working and effective health department, I can assure you that this move will not promote that. I can attest, like I said at the beginning, that all those who have come up to me have expressed their disagreement, their appallment, and their fear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any additional public comment at this time? Okay, we are adjourned.